Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com. He's got the most comprehensive Steelers site on the internet. And David Todd of TheHammerSpeaks.com. Dave, I guess you and I should be eating a little crow today. We thought the Steelers were going to go in and manhandle the Ravens. And boy, laying an egg is understating it. Maybe the most disappointing effort we've seen from the Steelers in a couple of years.
Yeah, that was a ass-kicking for sure, and I had it going the almost exact opposite way than that went. Probably with not so many turnovers, of course, but 35-7, man, that that snaps, I think that's Tomlin's opening day winning streak that's been snapped, and I think that I think a 28-point defeat was also the largest in, you know, that he has suffered as a head coach with the Steelers as well.
There wasn't anything good from this game. Right from the opening kickoff, Manny Sanders is offsides. You know, you think about who had a good game, and I can come up with Dan Sepulveda, and you know, there's not much else. Let's get right into it. I know you've gone through the tape a couple times already. First, before we get into kind of the play-by-play and what's going on, what's the first thing that jumped out at you when you think about the game and you think where the Steelers didn't match up? I mean, look, they lost this game in all three facets of the game, offense, defense, special teams, just like Tomlin said in his postgame presser. There's no getting around it. Well, actually, even before I get to that, why don't you give us the injury report? There, not a lot there, but a couple bumps and bruises.
Yeah, James Harrison, it's being described as a knee contusion. I think that's the only major thing to come out of that, according to Tomlin. He didn't sound too concerned in the postgame presser. I think there's some other bumps and bruises, but you know, nothing that's going to keep anything, I don't guess, out of practice this week initially, and I'm sure he'll update things tomorrow during his press conference.
Right. Okay. Well, like I said, if you were just going to step back and you could kind of boil this thing down to two sentences, what would you point to?
I hate to use the cliche that's floating around out there, David. You know, the old and slow, but that's exactly what the defense looked like, even though the linebacker core, you know, two-fourths of it, half of it basically, are young and just got new contracts. The defensive line really looked sluggish, like they were playing with their foot in, you know, feet in concrete. But, you know, and the offense never could get any rhythm on it. But defensive side of the ball is really what worried me the most. The Steelers couldn't pass protect for the most part against a strong Ravens defensive front there. But, boy, the defense really looked sluggish, really looked like they were over their heads yesterday.
Yep. When I'm thinking about things, I know by the way, one of the things I think I learned is I'm going to have to unfollow some people on Twitter. Not any of our listeners, but some of the media tweeting the game. I was like, man, oh man, it's unbearable to listen to some of this stuff. But you know, when the Ravens got the ball, Sanders offside on the opening kickoff. The Ravens elected to add 5 yards to a pretty good return, and then Ray Rice gouges them for, you know, about as long as the run we saw all of last year on the first play over the left side. Bryant McKenney with a good block. Troy gets caught up on the outside. Ferrier gets caught up on the inside, and McFadden's kind of running with the receiver getting blocked, and Rice had a ways to go before Timmons brought him down. They get a short gain and then the touchdown. And of course, the world is going to jump on Bryant McFadden there, but McFadden had pretty good coverage, and it was a very good throw. Bolden bobbled it a second. I wasn't actually sure when I saw the first replay that he got his second foot down in bounds when he had the ball, but he did. The Steelers are down 7-0 before you know it.
Yeah, they set the tone right off the top, and I had a feeling if you looked at their inactives that they turned in for that game, you know, 90 minutes before kickoff, they only had four receivers active for that game, and one of them was a rookie, or two of them were rookies, but I think Doss was the one that was sat down. But, you know, you knew right away with the extra tight ends they had active there that they did not have the tools to stretch the field. It looked like they were going to use their tight ends in a running game most of the day, and that's what ended up happening. But on that first drive there, boy, McKinney, boy, he certainly come off the ball strong. James Harrison got caught, up in that wash as well. Like you said, Troy got caught up in there, Farrier, and they were off to the races, and that was a foreshadowing event of how the day was going to go from there on. It really was.
I mean, that's what's amazing is you say, okay, it's three plays. That's not how it's going to go, but that is how it went.
Yeah, and I thought McFadden did have good coverage on the Bolden touchdown. Everybody's going to definitely point their fingers at him. It was a great pass. He might have mistimed his leap just a little bit there towards the end. But, if you rewatch that play again, I mean, he's just, we forget all the time when we look at Steelers that the other teams paid to play too. And Flacco put that ball right there, and it was he saw the one-on-one coverage. The safety was on the other side of the field. He took a shot at it, made the pass. Bolden made the catch.
Yep, and we're going to certainly pick apart, as is the reason we do this podcast, is to focus on the Steelers, and we're going to focus on what the Steelers did right, which was very little, and what they did wrong, which was a lot. But let's say this about the Ravens. You and I went after them in our podcast on Friday when we were breaking the game down. We said, look, they've got an offensive line of five guys that have never played a snap together. They've got a quarterback who's not among the NFL elite. They've got two corners who really aren't particularly experienced. And they've got two wide receivers, but nothing behind them. And they have tight ends who can't block. And let's just say this. We were pretty much in that game wrong about all those facets. Their offensive line was very good. Flacco was excellent. Their two corners got hurt, but it didn't show up in the game in any way. Their secondary played fine. They ran the ball effectively, and their tight ends were fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, other than us probably saying that their tight ends were pass-catching tight ends, I think that's the only thing that we might have nailed on that, because I thought even their tight ends blocked pretty good on the day. That's something I really wasn't expecting. I think at one point, too, you said Vonta Leach is a hell of a fullback, and that he is. He signed.
I think I also said he'll never touch the ball though.
Well, that's true too, and he did.
And he touched it five or six times.
You know about their game plan, David. And I had a feeling they were going to run at Harrison or run to the left side. I believe I mentioned that in the last podcast. I think also that I said they're going to try to use those tight ends. If you go back and look at the pass coverage stats in this game. I totaled it out that 17 of 29 passes that Flacco threw in this game went to a tight end, a running back, or a fullback. Okay.
Yeah.
And the other 12, I think, passes that he went, were to the receivers. And he only completed four of those, and all four of them to Anquan Bolden. So
yeah, I think he only targeted Lee Evans. Four times.
Okay. And Ike Taylor did not allow a catch. So there's somebody else that came to play yesterday, and that was Ike Taylor. But here, and we talked about this after the game, David, when I called you there. They did a great job of using Lee Evans and Bolden to clear out the center of that field and run those tight end drag routes, across really from one side of the field to the other. And that's really dependent on the offensive line to give you enough time for that to develop. And that's exactly what they did. The Steelers defense could get no pressure on Flacco, heavy pressure, nothing that he couldn't step up into or roll out on occasion on. And he would hit those tight ends or Ray Rice coming out of the backfield. And, that set up for quite a bit of a few explosive plays on top of it. And we know that explosive plays and turnovers can make a difference in a ball game. And boy, this one just that tox number just got out of hand real quick.
No question about that. And like you said, we talked about these drag routes that these guys were running, and it was the one time they follow it is when Ike follows the guy across the field with the receiver running it, and they check down to Ray Rice because Foote went with the receiver as well. So they had him double covered. They left Ray Rice on a big third down play. With the game still in the first half, with the game still certainly in hand, and they check down to Rice on a third and five or so, and he gets 20 yards right up the middle. Dave, what that reminded me of? I was thinking about it last night. It reminded me of Jordy Nelson in the Super Bowl, the receiver for the Packers. I think he had about 100, 150 yards receiving that day, eight catches or something like that. And he was targeted more times than that. He dropped a couple balls. If he had caught everything thrown his way, he would have had a monstrous day, even bigger day than he did. And the blueprint was there. You have guys running clear outs. You have you had Jennings, and you had some speed for the Packers where they could clear that out, and they used a third receiver. It turns out Baltimore used the tight end to run those routes, and then obviously they had the fullback and the halfbacks out in the flats to hit, as you pointed out, 17 of the 29 targets. It was, I'm surprised. You know, you can't have Lawrence Timmons running with Ray Rice for 7 seconds. There was one play where he on Rice's second touchdown, the ball he caught, where he ran inside and then came back out. Timmons didn't turn quite as quickly. And you can look and say, you know, Timmons didn't make the coverage. On that play, you know, when Flacco has 5 seconds to make that throw, I don't expect Timmons to stay with guys. But I think in general, the coverage was bad. I mean, it was really bad. It was schemed. They got out coached. And it didn't seem like the Steelers ever came up with an answer. And so there's that issue. And then there's the issue of pressure. They had one sack that came in the fourth quarter. They weren't getting pressure off the edge. I don't know if it was a gift of a call, but they got the holding call on Harrison early. Thank goodness on a play that went for a completion. But the front seven had trouble. The receivers didn't do much, but the receivers weren't targeted all that much. So right what you said at the top. That's cause for concern.
You know, a game that it kind of reminded me of a little bit, although they didn't really go vertical as much down the middle of the field, was the Patriots game a little bit from last year where they used their tight ends quite a bit.
Yep.
The Patriots, though, I think more, you know, would try to focus in on a slot receiver, you know, in a seam, you know, maybe a seven route or something like that, which we never really saw from the Ravens yesterday. But now we're seeing a couple of ways to beat the Steelers. We saw last year, you know, teams to spread you out and then take the underneath stuff and, you know, and be patient and play, you know, as far as your offensive line, if you're able to hold up and give the quarterback time. We've seen what those type quarterbacks will tear you apart. And now we see the Ravens yesterday run a lot of 21 personnel or 22 personnel. And that's, you know, that's basically two running backs, two tight ends, or two running backs, one tight end. Of course, the extra running back being a fullback in Vonta Leach. But they ran a lot of that, you know, with just two wide receivers on the field. So it wasn't like they were trying to spread you out as much as they were able to use those receivers to clear out. You know, take McFadden, take Taylor deep. The Steelers were still concerned about the big play that they keep the safety back. Now you know, as the game progressed, you saw Paul Amala down in the box quite a bit. And on the one touchdown to the left corner there to the tight end, they really sold run well. Paul Amala got caught up inside and then was, you know, basically lost the foot race to the back corner of the end zone there on that touchdown. You know, we another thing we saw yesterday is Ferrier and Foot interchanged there. And I wasn't so mad that happened, but if you're going to put one guy in, I think you need to stick with him. I think it's hard to have your middle, you know, your main guy inside coming in and coming out of the game like that. I think it messes up a little bit of your cohesion there. And if Tomlin was going to do that with Foot, and if that was the plan because of his preseason, which I did think that Foot had a great preseason, then let him play the damn game. You know, stop interchanging the two there. I know Ferrier's a leader in that locker room. It's hard to take him off the field like that, but I didn't like the interchanging of one of the middle linebackers there.
Yeah, Ferrier didn't have his best game. I thought he could have made a tackle on the Ravens' second touchdown. He decided to hit Rice rather than wrap him up when he ran over the right side. He had a chance maybe to stop him there.
Foot didn't have a good game either. He got, you know, I think there was a play or two he overran and missed some tackles as well.
Let me ask you this. You know, there's so many things to point to, and let's stay on the defensive side of the ball while we're here. You know, you didn't hear Brett Kiesel's name. Yeah, look, obviously with the Steelers' type of defense, the way they play, it's all set up for the linebackers. So you're not going to hear the defensive line's names. the linemen's names very often. But you didn't see Kiesel or Aaron Smith do virtually anything in terms of either pressure or stopping the run. But do you think for the Ravens, this whole thing was predicated on the fact that they had this passing game set up, but they were able to run the ball effectively the whole game? They had ran for 170 yards. They got an average gain of 5.5 yards a rush. This is something we haven't seen against the Steelers defense really in years. I mean, it all started with the first play. And, you know, it just felt like every time you see somebody run the ball in the Steelers, you feel like, okay, well, look, maybe a guy got a five-yard gain now and then. But, you know, three out of four plays, the Steelers are going to be stuffing them. They might get a gain or two. And if they get it, they're certainly not going to get it running straight ahead.
That's a good point. I'm glad you brought that up because I meant to talk about this. There was a lot of cut blocking going on by the Ravens yesterday. You saw them really, really cutting low, really knocking our guys off their feet. And that's something that we're not used to seeing, you know, with that defensive front. And, you know, you mentioned another thing about this defense, especially defensive line, they're not known so much for pressure and getting to the quarterback. But you never saw yesterday, you never saw either Kiesel or Aaron Smith or Ziggy or even Cameron Hayward, for that matter, able to even push, you know, one of their offensive linemen back deep into the pocket either. So, yeah, you're right. They were able to run, and they ran at will, and they mostly – it didn't matter either side, left, right, or up the middle. Their cut blocking scheme with an offensive line that had not spent much time together, and if that being the case, you know they'd rather run block than they would pass block because of, you know, the stunts and all like that, not having time to work on picking that up. But they actually did, and their whole scheme was predicated on the line play in an inexperienced, you know, line that hadn't played together, and they performed well.
Yeah, and so let's take a minute and get back into the game. The Ravens get that second touchdown, and the Steelers go three and out on their next drive. The Steelers actually come back and score after the second touchdown. A nice job by Ben keeping that play alive after Mendenhall ran the ball reasonably well. But he keeps that play alive and hits Emmanuel Sanders in the back of the end zone, 14-7. You know, you feel like at that point, everything's going to settle down, right? I mean, you feel like things are fine. The Ravens do have put together a little bit of a drive, but they have to punt, and it's a really bad punt. And one of the better plays of the game the Steelers made was Antonio Brown on that punt, that Coke punt that punted that ball 28 yards. He's a very good punter. He obviously didn't hit that one well, and it kills me when guys don't run up and catch the ball. We saw it later in the game from the Ravens side. One of the guy was there to catch a ball, and he let it bounce, and it bounced 10 yards, 15 yards behind him. Antonio Brown ran up, caught that ball, got a fair catch at the Steeler 28, and you felt like they were going to go okay. And you pointed this out to me earlier. The Steelers went three and out right there on an incompletion, a short pass to Antonio Brown for a little loss, and then another incompletion. And they never seem to get back in it.
Yeah, you know, people get on me. They say, I carry the Bruce Arians battle flag and all like that because, I mean, I think he gets undue criticism sometimes. But that was a key point of the game there. As you mentioned, they go down, they get the touchdown. Coke, 28-yard punt, as you mentioned there. Nice fair. You know, hey, that goes – a lot of people don't notice how big that fair catch was, and that's good for you to point it out there. The Steelers take over, and you're thinking, okay, we're down 7 points. There's eight minutes, 11 seconds left in half. Go down, you know, get at least three or seven here, right back in the ball game. And up to that point, they had run the ball pretty decent with Mendenhall up until that point, especially on that touchdown drive where I think Mendenhall had a couple of nice runs on. Well, then they go and they throw three straight times. And, you know, that has to have you scratching your head a little bit. So, you know, if there's ever a drive that you need to get on Bruce Arians for in that game, it was probably that drive, why they didn't at least try to run on first down and maybe use a running back screen on second to try to slow down this pass rush a little bit. But going three and out right there, now I'm not saying this would have changed the whole complex of the game, but you know, you never know what a drive can do, you know, especially if you get even right there. Maybe you're keeping the defense off the field for that much longer. You know, you're taking their crowd out of it. You know, they're back in at 14-14, but of course that didn't happen. So, you know, they go three and out. Sepulveda, thank God, had a nice, you know, 57-yard punt there. That was down by Mundy. But, you know, the Ravens took over the ball and marched all the way back down for a touchdown.
And this was the drive that really, for me, was surprising in a couple of ways. Because if you look at the sequence of this drive, the Ravens up 14-7, 7:04 left in the game. And they go Ray Rice for 9 yards. Incompletion. Ray Rice over left tackle, 13 yards. A little penalty. Ray Rice over Ricky Williams over right guard for 9 yards. An incompletion. And then he hits Dixon on one of those drags. He was wide open. He goes for 14. And then for me, the play of the game that really I mentioned it a little earlier here in our conversation. But 3rd and 6 from the Steeler 40. 3:15 left in the half. The Steelers up 7. Steelers had this problem. As good as their defense was last year, they had some problems on third downs in terms of third down conversions, particularly long third down conversions. This was a 3rd and 6 for the Ravens, and this is the play where Foote follows the pattern across the field. Ike Taylor's playing man-to-man, so he's going across the field. So I assume Foote blew the coverage. They check down to Ray Rice, and he goes 25 yards straight up the middle of the field with nobody around him. They're down to the 15. Bang, bang. Ricky Williams runs for 11. Rice gets in the flat and scores a touchdown, and it's 21-7. And again, the game's not over. But that's the kind of drive you were looking for, something to swing the momentum. The Steelers go three and out. The Ravens convert 1, 2, 3, 4 third downs. On that drive, the Steelers couldn't get off the field. It's 21-7. And now, you know, now people are pointing to last year's playoff game and say, well, it's the same score as last year's playoff game. But the die certainly was cast at that point. And, you know, they didn't recover. And boy, did they not recover to open the second half.
Yeah, what Baltimore was, what, 6 of 8 on third downs, I think, in this game, or something near that. And yep. And as you just pointed out there, I think, what, 3 or 4 of them came on that drive alone.
Yep, 4 on that drive.
4 on that drive. So that might have been the backbreaker drive after, you know, as we mentioned, that they went, you know, Steelers went 3 and out there after the defense gave them a stop the drive even before that. So, yeah, at that time, yeah, you kind of, your mind wanders back to the last time to see if they could, you know, pull off what they did last time. But the defense has to create turnovers, create splash plays for that to happen. And, you know, that didn't happen. And the offense just never could get in a rhythm after that. Of course, when you're turning the ball over, you know, a couple of plays into it, you know, that's definitely not going to help. But off they went, you know, really into halftime, down, what, 21-7 at that point, I guess.
Yes.
And, you know, it didn't get any better in the second half.
No, and we, you know, we can – I have to tell you, there's a play in the game. It's completely lost now, and it's not significant. But, you know, as you're watching it, you don't know what's going to be significant and what isn't going to be significant. You come out in the second half, obviously, you got the first play. It's 21-7, the Steelers are getting the ball. And the first play, there's clearly not a clean exchange, or somebody doesn't have the snap count right, meaning – Pouncey doesn't have it with the line, or the line's not right. It's just nothing was clean about the exchange. But they got back and they get it to Mendenhall, and Ligurski just whiffs on Nada. And, you know, Mendenhall gets cremated as he's getting the ball. Okay, so the Ravens get the ball and they go, you know, next play, next. I'm breaking things. My arms are flailing. This is what was happening to me yesterday too.
You know what? Interesting on that play though, David, on that fumble recovery. If you go back and put some earphones on, you watch that play again. I think that's the play where Pouncey's trying to make some line changes. He's trying to call out the mic. I think he's trying to shift protection. He looks confused about, you know, at that point too. I think the line's confused about what they want to, you know, what their job is to do on it. Ben even says, "Let's go, Pounce," like that. And then
it's interesting.
And immediately after that, I mean, immediately after he says, "Let's go, Pounce," the ball's snapped. Ligurski just barely chips and heads off to a linebacker. Ray, look, I think it was Ray Lewis. David Johnson looks unsure what he's supposed to do. The whole thing collapsed. It almost looks like the snap surprised Ben there.
Yep.
If there was that much confusion, I posted this early this morning on Twitter that if there was that much confusion in Roethlisberger, now, of course, we don't hear the audio down on the field for every play that clear like that, but if he's saying, let's go pounce right there, maybe he said, hey, you guys get this, you know, crap together, maybe that would have been a perfect time, even though it's the first damn play of the damn second half, to call a timeout.
Yep. So, they score the touchdown. We come right back and you run one play and it is not how you want to start the second half. And you turn the ball over and here's where you say, okay, this game, the Ravens score points here. This game's over. And this to me was a monumental mistake by John Harbaugh. And that's, it's so silly to say now when the Ravens win the game 35-7, I know it sounds stupid, but the Ravens have the ball in the 17. They're up at that point. 29-7 because they have a 2-point conversion on one of those touchdowns. So 29-7, that's a 22-point lead. If you get 3 points here, it's 25 points. That means it's a guaranteed 4-score game. 4-score game, there's still a ton of time, but, you know, it's 4 scores with 3 of them being touchdowns. So you have to feel really good if you're the Ravens. And they run for 4 yards. There's an incompletion, and then they get it to Dixon, and it's a good tackle by Ferrier to bring him down short of the chains. And it's fourth and one from the 8. And I tweeted this at the time. I said, I hope the Ravens go for this because the only way the Steelers get in this game is making a big play, and this could be a momentum changer. Please go and run the ball, and let's see if we can stuff them. And it's exactly what happened. A nice play by James Harrison. The Steelers have the ball. And I'm convinced the Steelers are going to get back in it, and they do, and they drive the ball really well down the field. And you know, it's just a really bad throw by Ben on the interception.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the Harrison stopped him yesterday, and that was a key point. That's just cockiness right there. That's me wanting, you know, that's Harbaugh wanting to basically show how big his, you know what is, you know, trying to basically just annihilate you at that point.
Yeah, he's really trying to embarrass you at that point.
Yeah, and that was probably the best play Harrison made in that game. Now Harrison had showed a lot of heart in that game, you know, but I really don't think he played very good overall. I think McKinney handled him for the most part on the day, along with you know, Vontaleach and the help that he got along with it. But that was a key stop, as you said. And at that point, you think, okay, well, maybe they can rally on this. This is a guy that's just basically trying to run the score up on us. We haven't done anything to this point, but at least we got a stop. At least they didn't score here. Let's go get some points. And they drove the ball down the field, and that pass that Ben made there that was intercepted by Reed, that was a gift right there. And I think Ed Reed's, I think that was what, 55 career interception.
He's catching Woodson.
Yeah, you know, and boy, he couldn't ask for a bigger gift right there. What a drive killer! You got to come away with points right there. Really 7, but it didn't happen.
You know, there's not much else to recap in terms of the game itself. Just some thoughts on my end. What we see, I think we all trust, if you're a Steeler fan, you've come to trust Ben when he makes plays out of the pocket or when he's on the run. Look, he's going to make the occasional bad throw. But yesterday I saw some stuff that I hadn't seen a lot of. On the run, he did not throw the ball well. So that was a little bit surprising. He did early on, all 5, I think before – by the time Manny Sanders got his second catch, after that, Antonio Brown made a catch, and every Steeler receiver, all 4 Steeler receivers, and Heath Miller had a catch, I think, by the time Ben had 6 completions. So he spread the ball around. That was by design. A lot of them were the little bubble screens, the quick outs, and they were running cross bucks offensively off of that. I thought that, you know, that stuff was working fine, but Ben wasn't able to make the plays out of the pocket, and that's something we haven't seen a lot of.
You know, a lot of people get mad at those bubble wide receiver screens and out like that, but what they're trying to do is they're trying to set up for the deep ball. They had a couple of nice. It was good to see Mike Wallace finally get off the line, get a little separation on a few of those slants, and make those catches. We need to see more of that, because what they're trying to do is they're trying to get the ball in. And I like to see more of this to Brown too. But you know, even on that one hot read, we saw the old Antonio Brown rookie. Antonio yep. Brown stuck his yep. head out there on one play there, and I think he totally missed a hot read right there, and the miscommunication with Ben, and I think Ben was jawing at him immediately after that. But these type things are what set up the long ball. The only problem is you cannot stretch the field vertically when you just cannot pass protect. Jonathan Scott, I hope he put enough quarters in the machine yesterday, because you might as well just hop on and get your ride, because there was a few times there. Now I didn't think they chipped enough with the backs as they could have. In a few situations, but that's here nor there. He really got owned, and it really leads you to question over the next few games here. Now, I don't want to take anything away from Suggs. Suggs is going to be one of the monster guys this year once again in getting after the quarterback. But at some point you've got a left tackle there that you drafted in the second round that had a pretty damn good preseason. Once Scott starts going through this again, I believe he probably starts at Seattle. But boy, if it gets nasty quick, it's time to get Gilbert in the game and see what he has.
That's an interesting thought. That'd be an awfully quick hook.
Well, I don't think you hook him right now. I think you give him some time to get better. But let's face it, David. After the we've got a few cupcake or quote unquote cupcake games supposedly coming up that we should win. We saw how the Colts looked yesterday without Peyton Manning. We see how Seattle. Oh my God, what a mess that is.
They're coming east. The Steelers better be 2-1 going to Houston.
Yeah, and I think we both agree that Houston game is not going to be a gimme when you have a 3-4 defense with Mario Williams waiting on you at that time. So you need to work, in my opinion, you don't need to forget about the next two games, but you need to work towards that game in Houston with what's going to be a pretty good defense that's going to be able to get after the quarterback. So, you have to think if Scott has, a bad early couple of series against the Seahawks, it's time to get Gilbert in there and start getting him ready there. Legursky, I mentioned this when Legursky was named the right guard. This is the same guy that was named the right guard when Essex went down last year early in the season. Legursky did not end the season as the starting right guard. As we all know, that went to Foster. This position is going to be in flux all year, because I've mentioned too, Legursky struggles with big bodies over the top of him, and that's what happened yesterday. Nada just owned him yesterday.
Yep.
And, a lot of times what happened is Nada will take two bodies with him too. And then that's what you saw on the first or second sack there. He ties up both Pouncey and Legursky for, the stunt to come around the side there unblocked, basically. Legursky, he's fine if he's not having to take on a guy right over the top of him. But we never saw really many opportunities where Legursky was able to get into space whatsoever where he's probably, better suited. So Pouncey had his slip-ups yesterday. I saw Kimo Atu. I haven't done my offensive line report yet, but Kimo Atu got walked back into Ben a few times. Of course, like I said, Scott and his kitty rides. You got to get that line right, and you might see Ramon Foster here at right guard here pretty soon.
Yeah, so, the issues coming to the season for the Steelers with the offensive line, that's clearly still an issue. We've talked about McFadden. I don't think he had a good – I don't think he had a great game. I don't think he had a terrible game. He certainly was getting picked on early, but it was – defensively, we're going to put it more on the pressure, lack of pressure, and on the linebackers. Ben didn't have a good game. I'm not worried about Ben. The receivers were the receivers. Mike Wallace had one drop, but no other drops that were noticeable. Heath Miller was Heath Miller. Let me ask you two general questions. One, Did you take anything away from the scraps, the pushy stuff around the pile, the Troy getting in it and coming up swinging? You don't see Troy do that ever. It looked to me like early in the game, I was entertained by Ray Lewis and Heath Miller kind of on the ground, face mask, having a conversation. And then you saw Heath Miller and I think it was, I don't know if it was Suggs or Ed Reed coming out of the sideline, having a conversation. And it looked like both those conversations were fired up. I'm sure there was some shit talking going on, but I think it looked like a lot of respect. I mean, I really enjoyed watching the interaction with Heath Miller and Ed Reed as they come off the sideline. They weren't patting each other on the back, and they were talking to each other, but it was, I think, mutual acknowledgement that, you know, we're all day, baby. We're here all day. And that's from both sides, and it was early in the game. Later in the game, you see the chippy stuff around the pile. I'm not going to say I have to watch it again to see if I think one side was more responsible than the other. But what did you take away from that, other than the fact that Ike Taylor did something stupid?
Frustration, just plain out frustration. You're getting your ass beat. They're really starting to talk to you at that point. The Ravens were just as guilty there, but I mean, Ike really, that was stupid. And we've seen Ike get thrown out of the games, before for stuff similar to that. He did get some more, you know, he did, I think, control himself as he was walked off out of that skirmish. But, you know, that's frustration. That's the bully, been kicking your ass all day and you finally had, enough of it, or at least you think you have. and that's what flowed out there, especially with Troy too. I wouldn't be surprised if Troy, I have to watch that part of, you know, I kind of just go straight to the plays when I go through this thing. So I'm really hitting fast forward quite a bit. I don't know if Troy might get a little, gift in the mail, you know, yep. Tuesday or Wednesday here as well. So, just plain out frustration.
And second question is, I was surprised at the last two drives, the game's out of hand. Ben was in there. The offensive line's not doing the job. I was not necessarily terribly surprised that Ben was in the game. I do think you want to work on your two-minute offense this early in the season. This is an opportunity to do it. We saw it with a bunch of teams happening over the course of games that were blowouts where teams were working on their two-minute offense late in games. But Ben was getting beat up. And I was a little bit surprised with the play calling, and they left him in there, particularly that last drive. And he took a shot on that last drive. I was happy to see him get up. Were you surprised that either A, Charlie Batch didn't get a call, or the Steelers didn't just run a little bit different protection scheme or something to spare Ben? Because there seemed to be some unnecessary hits going on there late in the game.
It didn't surprise me. They left him in. Hey, you know, that's like putting a white flag up, I think, in Tomlin's eyes in a division game, saying, all right, you beat my ass there. I think they had to try to gain something positive, which they didn't by leaving him in there. I mean, let's face it, at that point, you know, he had a couple of nice passes to on that last drive to Ward and to Heath Miller. But, you know, those were gimmies. Those were, I like to call those fantasy stat, you know, garbage time stat builders and all like that. I don't know, you know, would Charlie, do you really want Charlie Batch catching the end of the flack there, you know, at quarterback? So it didn't surprise me. It did not make me mad that Roethlisberger stayed in the game. I just wish it would have been more productive to put, you know, a few more points on the board than they obviously didn't.
Yep. So, you know, we've covered most of it. We didn't touch much on Antonio Brown in the return game, but I will say he looked really close to breaking some things. One of the kick returns, I think if he gets one more block, and I also think on one of the punt returns when he came back to the left side of the field as you watch on television toward the viewer, if he could have gotten away from one more guy, the Steelers had it lined up. He had done some dancing around, but I really did like the fact that he was looking to take things up the field. I think he was a big positive in the return game. Swish him, you know, some nice long kickoffs. Sepulveda did well. So special teams, you know, maybe other than the 30-some yard return on the opening kickoff, I think special teams were a non-factor. In fact, you know, the Steelers might have had a small edge in special teams. But when you get it handed to you so visibly on both sides of the ball, there's not that's not a lot to hang your hat on.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be passing out awards or anything. for that. You know, to make matters worse, David, you know, immediately after the game, I think they had mechanical problems with the plane or whatnot. They had to sit on, you know, either in the airport or in the on the runway or whatnot, waiting for another plane. So I bet, you know, I would have broke out the projector right there, man, and started showing them what they did wrong. You know, I know everybody was tired and probably wasn't a lot of talk going on, but it made a bad day get even worse after that.
Yeah, and just to wrap things up here as we've run on a bit, Tom, and you and I also have had this discussion off air about, you know, the Steelers, the level of swag versus a level of arrogance. And I don't think the Steelers crossed that line, and I wouldn't want to suggest that I even know where that line is. But there's no question Mike Tomlin's not going to have any trouble getting people's attention for the next couple weeks.
Yeah, they went in. I forget. I think it might have been our buddy Mark Cabali, you know, on the Trib posted something how they were just, you know, had arrogance and all like that, and heading into that game. I think they might have read too much of the press. What was going on. They probably thought, well, coming off three nice preseason games, they were pretty unstoppable here. And they got their ass handed to them. And if you read a lot of the quotes coming out after the game from the Steelers, mostly defensive side of the ball, you know, they acknowledged that they got beat. And
yeah, that's a very good trait of this head coach, and it flows down, is that these guys don't make a lot of excuses. They're, you know, when they get beat, they're generally willing to acknowledge. I mean, you know, Mike Tomlin's the first to tell you, we got beat in every facet of the game.
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much you can put out there as far as an excuse other than, you know, you got outplayed. And I guess I'm kind of just worried about this front seven and the pressure they could get going forward, because you know, the zone type defense that they run, scheme and all like that, is predicated. I mean, hey, a guy can run away from you from one zone to the next and settle into that zone. So, you know, I really expect him to get their attention this week. And you know, some people are saying, oh, these guys need to get off Twitter and get off this, get off that. Maybe that's a little bit overstated. You know, it's what you do during practice and what you do on the field during the game that, you know, as far as execution goes, it counts. So you could always pick out something small like that, like a shuffleboard table needs to be taken out of the locker room or something like that. Hey, it comes down to, you know, execution and playing.
No question. It does. And, you know, well, we'll get back at it on Wednesday. We're going to hopefully have one of the Seattle Seahawks beat writers give us a little preview of what went on yesterday for them and take an overview of their team. We'll take a look around the NFL as well. Some interesting stuff yesterday, certainly the division game with Cincinnati coming back and getting ahead early, falling behind Cleveland in Cleveland, and then coming back to win that game. A little bit of a surprise. Dave and I had our picks. We'll review all that stuff. We'll cover the Mike Tomlin presser on Tuesday. We'll see how the injury report looks. We were dead wrong. Disappointing for Steeler fans, Steeler Nation. And, you know, it's one game. At the end of the day, we knew coming out of this game, one of these two teams, probably two pretty good teams, was going to be 0-1. We're both a little surprised it's the Steelers, but 15 more weeks to go.
Yeah, I think it's way too early to be jumping off the bridge just yet. I don't think they're going to cancel the season because of this. We mentioned the next upcoming games that all three really are winnable. I think the key game in this is going to be the Texans and all like that. But I think if you can get through six games or so on the schedule, you know, at 4-2, 5-1, I think everything still sets up the way it did originally. So instead of possibly, you know, maybe winning this one and possibly losing the one in Houston, that's the one that you got to get your eye on now. Yeah, and I think if they come out of Houston 3-1, I think you're in good shape.
No question, you win three games, you're in good shape. I will say, if they go into Houston 1-2, it's a huge red flag.
Yeah, if they go into Houston 1-2 at this point, with already being 1-0-1, that means you couldn't beat Seattle, who looks absolutely horrible, and you could not beat a Kerry Collins run Indianapolis Colts, which just looked, I mean, absolutely pitiful yesterday.
Yep. So All right, well, that's going to wrap things up for us today on episode 15. We'll be back with you Wednesday for episode 16. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.